Noah Gillian Show, and I, of course, am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 16th of November, 2022, and on today's episode, we're going to be reviewing the Eagles' unfortunate loss to the Commanders from Monday Night Football, as well as discuss a little how-to in the fantasy football world regarding trades, everybody's favorite thing, with many trade deadlines approaching in many people's leagues. I wanted to take a how-to on how I go about that, so we'll do both of those topics on the show today. But before we get into that, please hit that subscribe button if you're joining us on YouTube. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please give the show a follow. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. Our handles for the show are in the box right here. If you want to check the description, you'll be able to find the handles for myself on Twitter and the show on Twitter and Instagram. But without further ado, let's just get right into it. All right, so the Philadelphia Eagles suffered their first loss of the year. This Monday night on primetime, hosting the Washington Commanders, dropping their record to 8-1, down into a tie for the first place in the NFC Conference. They have the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Vikings, so they are still sitting in the number one seed. But a pretty tough game to watch as a Philadelphia fan. There's no other way to sugarcoat that. Like I said, they ended up losing this game. Final score of 32-21. It was 26-21, but a late fumble on a hook and ladder play. Washington scored to make the score 32-21. But that score was more indicative of how the game played out. It was really tough to watch, just because it felt like Washington's offense was on the field the entire game. And when you look at the numbers, they were, for the most part. The biggest thing in terms of, I mentioned this a little bit on our quick review we posted on our social media platforms, be sure to go check that out. But the time of possession is so crucial when you're going up against a team with a fantastic offense like the Eagles have had all season. You know, other things like the Chiefs with Mahomes or the Buccaneers with Tom Brady, how he can continually stay on the field. A lot of teams will try to keep the ball. It makes a lot of sense. Play keep away with the other team. More time your offense is on the field, the less time their offense is on the field. Generally good news for the team with less explosion at the offensive side of the ball. And that's what Washington did. They came in and they ran 81 plays to the Eagles 47, and they controlled 40 minutes of the play clock of the total 60 minutes. They went two-thirds in terms of 66% of the play clock. They possessed the ball. They ran almost twice the amount of plays that the Eagles did, and it was just a clinic on ball control, third down conversions. You know, looking at, I think the third down conversions was one of the biggest stats of the game, because every single time, it felt like the Eagles were getting them to third down so much in the game. Like, it was like first down, they would run it, wouldn't get like a ton. Second down, either they would throw it, you know, for a short gain or incomplete, or they would run it for like 6 yards. And then it'd be like third and four, third and three. There were so many of those, like in between third and shorts. And they would just run it and barely get it. I remember making a little mental note to myself, and during the game, it was like they were just like falling on the first down line. So like they weren't getting these explosive plays, but they were just moving the sticks, consistently moving the sticks. I thought it was a lot better than this, but their third down conversions from the game ended up being 12 of 21. So you forced 21 third downs for a team, and you know, going 12 for 21, it's not a good percentage, but when you convert 12 of them, when you get so many opportunities at third down, like, you're going to convert a general amount, and especially when you're at third and three, third and two, third and one, third and four, like, those, it's a lot easier to get those than third and eight, third and nine, third and long. So I just thought that was such a crucial part of the game. And obviously, you know, the Eagles went out and they spent a first-round pick on Jordan Davis, a run-stuffing defensive tackle, and through the first 8 games of the year, they've been pretty good against the run, and all of a sudden, when you take him out of the lineup, what do you know? We start allowing these big, big days in terms of total rushing yards, and it's been tough. Obviously, it's been ever since he kind of went down a couple weeks ago. The last couple weeks have been a little tough. Damian Pierce on Houston, ran absolutely all over the Birds in that game. Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson formed a nice 1-2 punch where they both got off in terms of rushing yards. They ended up rushing for 152 yards, so nothing, you know, fantastic, but they gave Brian Robinson 26 carries. Like, they gave Antonio Gibson 14 carries. Between two running backs, that was 40 carries between those their two star running backs. And yeah, they only got 3.3 and 3.1 per carry, respectively, but you gave 40 carries. You allowed 40 carries to two guys. You know, couple that on the Eagles side of the ball, Miles Sanders only got the ball 12 times. And, you know, Jalen Hurts only ran the ball 6 times. And while they, yeah, they did run 4.5 a clip, and Jalen Hurts ran 4.7 a clip, Kenneth Gainwell got a one rush for 7 yards, like 7 yards a carry. Obviously, it's only one rush, but like, but that's only, you know, that's only 19 carries. They had 20 total carries as a team. And you're talking about 40 between two rushers on the Commanders. Like, it's going to be very hard to win when you allow that kind of output. And I don't know if that was, there was a bunch of other things that went into the loss, and we'll touch on as we go through. But I think the main thing, the main takeaway we have is just the third down, not being able to get off the field, and then just the run defense. Obviously, they didn't run for a huge total, but they ran it. Like I said, it felt like they just got to the sticks every time and they get the first down. They kept moving the chains. And like, when you allow that over and over and over and over again, A, your defense gets tired. B, your offense can't generate any momentum because they're not on the field. And C, you're just you're building confidence in the other team too by allowing them to continue to push, to continue to run plays, to continue to run the football, just lean on you with the offensive line. There's nothing more that the offensive lines like to do than run block. They can just go and attack and lean on people instead of being back on their heels, pass blocking the whole game. So when you got it, when you have that formula, that recipe, you know, you have games like Monday night where Washington comes in as the heavy underdog and they come out and they take it to the Eagles flat out. Now, it was the second game in a divisional series. Obviously, the Eagles went into Washington earlier this year and, you know, in the first half, you know, blew the brakes off the Commanders and didn't really have to do much in the second half. And then, obviously, in this game, Commanders adjusted. They knew, you know, better ways to attack the Eagles, and it showed. Now, giving all the props to the Commanders, this was still a game the Eagles should have won. Like, 300%, this was still a game the Eagles should have won. The Eagles lost 3 fumbles in this game, including the one at the end where Devontae Smith tried to throw it back and he fumbled and Washington scored. And there was an interception by Jalen Hurts. So you're talking about 4 total turnovers. The Eagles have only had 3 turnovers all year in the first 8 games, and there was 4 total turnovers, 3 that really impacted the game. But still, you hit the same amount of turnovers in this game, if you take away the last one, as the whole year up into that point. And it's not like they didn't take the ball away. Washington fumbled early in the game, literally in the first possession. Josh Sweat, strip sack, fumble. Eagles land on the ball. They end up scoring a touchdown. C.J. Gardner-Johnson gets an interception, his 5th straight game with an interception, whatever the case may be. League-leading interception, like ball hawk back there. And what do? 3 and out, give the ball right back. So it's like, the turnovers in their favor were huge momentum swingers. And for us, it was the opposite. It just totally killed us. Obviously, the Quez Watkins one, I think, is the biggest play of the game. You know, it's 26-21. Eagles have the ball. 5-6 minutes left. And Jalen Hurts makes a beautiful throw to Quez Watkins. He doesn't got a lot of targets this year, but he makes a great read, a great route, and he's open. Hurts hits him on the run, and he tumbles over to make the catch. No one touched him. He gets up. He's like, all right, I'm going to go run it in. And right when he gets up, he gets hit and drops the ball. And that is just such a backbreaker because they had nothing going offensively. And then all of a sudden, you get this jolt of energy where it's like, big play downfield. We're going to run in. We're going to score. We're going to take the lead. And he fumbles right away. Washington lands on it. No ifs, ands, or buts. And they get the ball back. So it's just those types of plays that are just momentum killers. Obviously, the Dallas Goedert fumble was a big loss on that play. Obviously, another fourth quarter drive where they're driving. Good play. You're getting first down yardage, and then, you know, he's getting his face mask yanked, and he fumbles the ball. He hurts his shoulder on the play, and it's just like, it just consistently shooting herself in the foot. Even the interception that Hurts threw in the first half, it's like he probably had something underneath, but you saw when they played the Steelers two games ago, the ball downfield that A.J. Brown caught in double coverage, and then you have, you know, pretty much a similar play, and he puts it on his hands. Jalen Hurts literally puts a ball so good the corner missed it, the safety missed it going on. It hits A.J. Brown in both of his hands, and as they're kind of going to the ground, the safety just kind of grabs it from him and takes it. So, like, there was a lot of plays where it was just kind of, the play was made, it just wasn't finished. So that's where it's just like, oh, it's so frustrating because they really should have won this game. I think there was enough to win this game. But at the end of the day, they didn't. The thing, they fumbled the ball away. They didn't protect it. They weren't disciplined. They were penalized 7 times for 75 yards. I mean, they're pretty efficient on third down, 5 for 8, but you only had 8 attempts at third down. Only ran 47 plays, like, not great. So overall, I think the biggest reasons for this game were the third down conversions for the Washington Commanders, and then also the time of possession, the total number of plays were probably right there neck and neck. And then, you know, just the turnovers. I mean, that's been one of the reasons why the Eagles have been undefeated so far this year is the turnover margin. We've been talking about it all year. They've been easily number one in turnover differential this year. They protect the ball and they take the ball away. And they lead by a wide margin. They have up there in takeaways and they're obviously way down there in terms of total turnovers. And it came back to bite them a little bit in this game. It did. They're still probably the number one team in turnover differential, even with that, because they still took the ball twice, even though they gave the ball away 4 times. So they're still, you know, that to be able to, you know, you still took the ball away twice. You still created some havoc on the defensive side of the ball. And it's just you got to control what you can control, and that being holding on to the football. So I think those are, you know, all reasons why the Eagles lost that game. And I think they're all correctable things moving forward. Especially once Jordan Davis gets back healthy. The Eagles actually went out today and they signed a defensive tackle, Linval Joseph, big 340-pound defensive tackle, former second-round pick for the New York Giants. He played for the Vikings, Chargers, to name a couple other teams. So he's been, he was active as of last year, you know, just has been a free agent. But Howie went out and said, listen, we need to get this guy. We need to get this guy to fill Jordan Davis's role until he can come back. In 2 more weeks, he'll be eligible to return against Tennessee in week 13. We'll obviously have 2 games before that. So that'll be a really interesting thing to see. It'll be really interesting to see how the Eagles bounce back from the loss. And then also, you know, just how they deal with, you know, the expectation as the season goes on. Obviously, there was a lot of 17-0 talk, but now, even with the one loss, there's still going to be a lot of talk of one seed, best team in the NFC, Super Bowl, all that talk because of their record and how good they've been playing. So there's a lot to go over. I did want to address the elephant in the room, talking about that Eagles game. Obviously, the refereeing, there was a lot of chatter, at least yesterday, today, about the refereeing in that game and how, obviously, the missed face mask on the Dallas Goedert play. The roughing the passer call at the very end of the game, which pretty much sealed the game. So it was like, and this is, you know, Jason Kelce on his New Heights podcast today too, and just talked about like, it's kind of like loser mentality to blame the referees because they're going to miss calls. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. When in reality, Eagles could have done so many other things to win this game, to go out and just blame the refs for certain things. And I've fell victim to this myself, obviously playing sports growing up. Anybody who's played any kind of competitive sport and you play with human referees, obviously they're going to miss calls. And it's frustrating in the moment. But you got to also realize that there's so many other moments that they could have won the game. If Quez Watkins doesn't fumble that ball, even if he's down, they're probably going to score a touchdown. Even if they don't, they kick a field goal, they're down 3, there's 5 minutes left, you get a stop. All you have to do is kick a field goal and you win the game. So, you know, Dallas Goedert, if he holds onto the ball, obviously he's getting yanked his face mask and everything, but if he holds on to the ball, you drive down the field, maybe score a touchdown there. You know, you step up on a couple third downs, you block. Like, there's so much other that went wrong for the Eagles just to blame the referees. The face mask, I thought, was a little bit egregious just because of, like, he literally was grabbing him by the face mask, and usually there's tells with that. I get if they miss it, But I do think that could be one thing that's reviewable. I think it's kind of cut and dry enough where if you go to replay and you see someone like Yankin, now maybe if there's like a finger that gets caught and there's like a little tug, maybe use your discretion on that. But there was a legit grab and pull. I think maybe down the line in a couple years, maybe they add that to the replay review system where they think, hey, maybe, listen, he probably, at the time of the face mask, he possessed the football. So anything after that is null and void because of the face mask. So I think that's one thing they could potentially do. But at the end of the day, he didn't hold on to the ball. Granted, by that face mask and by some combination of hits, Dallas Goedert ends up hurting his shoulder. So that, I think, is the bigger reason why he ended up fumbling. Obviously, if you're carrying the ball with your arm and you get hit and there's like a shockwave, you break something, you can't grip it. Obviously, you're going to let go of the ball. So that's happened to be his shoulder. So he ended up fumbling. So I thought that was a little bit more egregious than the roughing the passer call. At the end of the game, obviously third down, Heinicke does not have anything. He takes down a knee, sweat kind of taps him. And then a second or two go by and Brandon Graham comes over and kind of like shoves him a little bit into the ground. And by the letter of the law, it's a penalty. It's a personal foul. It's a late hit. It is what it is. So you can't really be mad at that. It's frustrating because like he gave himself up, but Brandon Graham even came out and said, he's like, well, I kind of thought he was like getting back up. Like, you don't know. Like, it's hard to kind of turn off that switch, that pass rushing switch. Like, this is third down. You need this stop. You get the ball back. And if you get a big sack, you maybe push them out of field goal range. You get the ball back. We have a chance to win the game. So all you're thinking about is stopping third down, getting them down, tackling them. So I can understand where it's hard to turn off that mentality. Like, I got to go get the quarterback. But at the same time, it was the letter of the law. He gave himself up. He hit him. It is what it is. You can't really, hurt. You should have not been in that position anyway in the game. So unfortunately, that happened, but I don't think the referees really made as big an impact as I think a lot of people are choosing to, believe, coming out of that game. So I think that's kind of, not the best way to go in terms of assessing what happened during the game. So they ended up losing, obviously, first loss. They got the Colts coming up this week, 1 o'clock game on Sunday. So that's going to be a really, really interesting game. Real quick to wrap up the Commanders game, Dallas Goedert, like I mentioned, suffered a shoulder injury during the game. He actually got placed on injured reserve as of today. So he is going to miss a minimum of 4 games. Talking about week 11, 12, 13, 14. Next time he's going to be eligible to play is week 15. So that's really when the meat of the division matchups start to get going. So you're going to need him back in terms of there. But he's going to be out for a month. So you're going to need other guys to step up at the tight end position. You're going to need your wide receivers to step up a little bit more. And, it's really going to be tough because Dallas Goedert is a great run blocker. So I'm interested to see how they adjust the run game to deal with the lack of Goedert. But then again, Jack Stoll and a couple of other tight ends are good pass blockers and run blockers. So we'll see kind of how that goes. But let's not sugarcoat it. Dallas Goedert is a huge part of this offense. He is a massive part of what the Eagles do. So it is going to be interesting. It's going to be see how they adjust to not having Dallas Goedert. It's going to be interesting to see how they adjust coming off a loss. So we'll really be interested to see that. Like I said, matchup against the Colts this week. It's going to be really, really interesting. Jeff Saturday recently appointed interim head coach for the since terminated Frank Wright in Indianapolis. Goes into Las Vegas, gets his first win as head coach. Now they go home to host the Philadelphia Eagles. And this is a tough matchup for the Birds. I'm not even going to lie to you. Granted, the Colts haven't been great, but they're 4-5-1. They're kind of just a mediocre team. But what they do possess is an above-average offensive line and a superstar running back. And for a team that is struggling to stop the run, it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be the next couple games. You got the Colts this week. You got the Packers a week after that. And then you have the Titans. Three teams who want to run the ball. Like Jonathan Taylor wants to run the ball, Indianapolis. The Packers, they have Aaron Jones, they have A.J. Dillon. They want to run the ball. They don't have wide receivers like that on the outside. They want to run the ball and set up play action and use their best two players in A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. And then you have the Titans, who are the run team in the league with Derrick Henry, who wants to run 30 times, 35 times a game, and who's probably the hardest player to tackle in the league. So you have a tough stretch here where you should have Jordan Davis back for the Titans game, but you're not going to have him for this game against the Colts. You're not going to have him for the Packers game. Packers game is at home, so take that what you will. But This is going to be a very, very interesting game. Matt Ryan was benched for Sam Ehlinger for Indianapolis at the quarterback position. He has since been reinstated as the starting quarterback, and I think that's good news for Indy. He's more of a professional. He understands defense a lot better. He's going to be a lot quicker with his ball placement. They have a really good receiver in Michael Pittman Jr. on the outside. They have another a couple other nice pieces at the other wide receiver positions and the tight ends. They have monster tight ends. So it's going to be a tough matchup. It's really going to be a tough matchup. I'm interested to see what kind of wrinkles they'll throw in on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see how much Linval Joseph can get up to speed to be able to help in the run defense. I think it's really just going to come down to if they can stop the run. I think the Eagles should be able to score enough on the Colts defense. Shaquille Leonard on their defense, their star middle linebacker, formerly known as Darius Leonard, changed his name to Shaquille Leonard. I guess he's always been called Shaquille, but whatever the case may be. Leonard, their middle linebacker, stud linebacker, was big in their run defense, is out for the year now. He's been in and out of the lineup all year. So their defense should be a little bit more susceptible than it, you know, might seem on paper. So I think that the Eagles should be able to get a little bit better, but they do have really good players in the secondary, like Kenny Moore, a very, very good cornerback, Pro Bowl cornerback. So they have DeForest Buckner on the defensive line, stud defensive lineman who they traded San Francisco for. So there's still some pieces on that defense you got to worry about, but like I said, it all comes down to Jonathan Taylor, it all comes down to Quentin Nelson, it all comes down to that offensive line and how they get a push on the Eagles defensive line. Because if it's anything like that, like Matt Ryan, you know, say what you will about Ryan, probably as good, if not better, than Taylor Heinicke at this point in their careers. I don't think that's anything crazy to say. Jonathan Taylor is better than Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson. Their offensive line, Quentin Nelson, is arguably the best guard in the league. So you have probably a little bit better offensive line. And you have a quarterback in Matt Ryan, who I already mentioned, like, understands the run game, understands what he's looking at. So it's going to be a tough matchup. I don't want it to come across. I mean, they were 7.5-point favorites. Last time I saw, they were down to 6.5. So a lot of people are betting on the Colts at home, a big home underdog. It's going to be a very tough game. But you know what they say? That's why you play the game any given Sunday. So we'll see what happens then. But we will obviously have a lot more coverage after that game wraps up. All right, now we are going to shift to the second part of the show today, and we're going to talk a little fantasy football. I haven't been talking as much fantasy this year as I wanted to. I was kind of thinking about that yesterday, like, hey, I, you know, really obviously love fantasy football. I wanted to talk a little bit more about it, and I wanted to kind of start to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, and that's trading in fantasy football. I'm a notorious dealer. I love to reshuffle my roster. It's one of the very fun things to do in fantasy football. Obviously, watching your players play on Sunday is a lot of fun, but the appeal to fantasy football is being able to construct your own roster, adding, subtracting players, but also trading amongst your league. And I think the very best leagues have a lot of trades in them. And I almost feel like I'm missing out when I see trades happening in my league. And I'm like, damn, like I wish I could have got in on that, or I wish I was talking to someone to get a deal done. And I think a lot of people struggle with making deals. I've talked to a lot of people, and it's just like, we like certain things, and then it's just like deals flame out. Like, well, I'm always talking deals with people, and then they'll kind of flame out. And so I kind of wanted to discuss how to trade. Obviously, I'm a big trader. I've mentioned that obviously throughout this. And, you know, anybody who's been in a league with me has probably made a trade with me at some point. I'll make multiple. I'm always early on trades. Right after the draft, I'm always ready to discuss. And I'll talk about a couple trades I've made this year and kind of my thinking when you go into it. So I think, number one, when you're trading in fantasy football, the number one thing you need to look for is what do I have and who needs that in the league? What do I have in excess, and what do I have that's expendable, and who can benefit from that in my league? Because let's just be honest, nobody likes to get fleeced in a deal. I absolutely hate it when I make a deal and I'm looking at it and I'm just like, I don't like where this went. Or if I see a deal go down, or everybody's been in this situation where you see a trade go down and you're like, that doesn't even make sense. This guy's just getting so much better players. Like, it doesn't even make sense. You almost feel like people are cheating. But when you get on the short end of that stick, you don't want to trade anymore because you're like, I don't want to get fleeced again. I don't want to get robbed again. I don't want to lose all my best players and not get anything back. I don't want to go through that. Like, and it's understandable. It's completely understandable. I hate that happening. I hate when I see that happen to other people. And it's frustrating because then, like, those bridges get burnt almost and you never, like, want to deal with that person. So in my situation, like, I'm always looking at what do I have and what can I move. And perfect example, the other day I made a deal. I was looking for wide receivers. My team, I had Cooper Kupp, and I pretty much had no wide receiver too, but I had multiple running backs, Austin Eckler, Travis Etienne, Miles Sanders, Daryl Henderson, and Gus Edwards. So multiple starting running backs, all starting running backs on their team, some better than others, and I wanted to move some of my depth away to get a wide receiver. So what I did was I went around the league and I said, who could use help at running back, but more importantly, who has wide receivers to move? And I ended up finding the one team. There was only pretty much one team that made it work in my division. It just happened to be the team in my own division who I'm fighting for a playoff spot for. But at the end of the day, our talks accelerated quickly because my needs matched up with their excess and their excess matched up with my needs. So it was a win-win. Are the players involved, whatever the case may be. I ended up moving Daryl Henderson along with another player for Michael Pittman Jr. and Donovan Peoples-Jones. So I got a couple wide receivers. I moved him, Daryl Henderson, and a wide receiver. I can't remember the exact other player I put on the deal, but it worked out. Daryl Henderson, solid running back. He needed some help at running back. He got that in Daryl Henderson, and I got some wide receivers to help me build some depth. So like that's what you really need to look for when trying to think of any deal. Just flat out, you need to make it a win-win situation because that's what people want. Also, another thing, you always got to be looking to improve. Throughout the year, the team that you draft is never going to be the team that makes it to the end of the year. You have injuries, you have bye weeks, you have, unfortunately, suspensions, like players get cut. You have all these certain things. So you're always, it's so important to take self, like almost self-scout your own team, like almost like look at it from another manager's perspective, like, okay, what does he have? Like, oh, he has a bunch of running backs, but he doesn't really have any wide receivers. And you got to be honest, like, with your team, because one thing that I always, this has been one of my big faults in trading, is I always value my players so much higher than other players. It's like when you're making a deal, you tend to see the upside in your players, and you almost tend to see the downside in other players potentially coming into your roster. So that's where you kind of have to have the understanding, well, no, I do think this player can be really good, but then what is the downside on this player? Okay, this player, he wants to deal me. Well, I can kind of see the downside, but what if it does hit? What if it works out? And then you can kind of help balance things from there. I think that has been a really big thing for me. Like, I've traded, and this will kind of go to the next thing. Like, you need to be willing to trade players. I've been talking to someone in a league I was talking about like the other day. This guy's going for it in our league, sending a bunch of trades, getting a bunch of trades done, and he's building a really good team. And he was like, I'm nervous, like I'm almost scared, like I traded away like too good of players. Like, and at the end of the day, it's like, well, what are you getting back in that? Well, you're getting stud running backs, you're getting wide receivers that can start for you. Like, your lineup is better than it was 2 weeks ago. Then that's what you're playing for. That's all you got to play for in that sense. So that is so important. You need to be comfortable parting with a good player. Case in point, I did this earlier. Jalen Howard was on the show. Obviously, my good man from a fantasy league we're in together. I traded him Breece Hall for Travis Etienne, and that was after week two. And right after that week, Breece Hall starts going off, and he is everything I thought he was going to be after draft day. I drafted Breece Hall with the expectation that he was going to perform as he was after week two, after he started getting going. He was scoring 50-yard touchdowns. He was consistently a top 10 running back. And every week after week two, I'm just kicking myself. Like, I traded away this good player, and I'm so mad because I don't have him on my team anymore. But you have to also understand, well, what did I get back from him? I got Travis Etienne back. Why did I make that deal in the beginning? Well, I liked that deal in the beginning because personally, I like the Jacksonville Jaguars offense better. Travis Etienne, second year in the league, even though he didn't play last year. So he's a little bit more comfortable with the NFL system. He's got Trevor Lawrence with him. He's just more in a Doug Peterson. I love the offensive play caller in Jacksonville. Robert Saleh, I don't know what the defense looks. I don't know about Zach Wilson. When he comes back, I don't know what he's going to do with Breece Hall, if he's going to check down to Breece Hall as much anymore. I like Etienne. He's starting to get more and more touches. And the only thing standing in the way of Travis Etienne was maybe James Robinson. He just came off an Achilles injury. Maybe he would potentially be in and out of the lineup again. So you kind of have to bring yourself back in, like, okay, well, that's why I make the deal. And then what do you know? Weeks later, unfortunately, injuries happen. Breece Hall hurts his knee, out for the year. James Robinson gets traded. Matter of fact, literally in the same, this all becomes connected in terms of it. James Robinson gets traded from the Jaguars to the Jets because the Jets now have a need at running back. And now Travis Etienne is getting a ton of carries. He's the undisputed number one back. And now he is the top 10 running back in the deal. So, like, you need to be comfortable with your decision making. And then once it happens, you can't go back and think, I wish I didn't do this. And I fall victim to this all year. Every single week I'm watching Breece Hall rip off a touchdown. I'm just so angry. Like, I can't believe I traded him away. And now the other leagues where I kept Breece Hall in that I'm in, I'm upset. And the league I have Travis Etienne in now, I'm very happy because it worked out well. And you need to really just trust your thinking process, and then where it goes from there. And then another thing is getting back to the needs. This was a deal that I made in the preseason. I drafted Alexander Mattison, backup running back for the Minnesota Vikings. He backs up Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook has been someone who has not played 16 games any year in his career. The last couple years, Alexander Mattison slips right into the starting running back role when Dalvin Cook misses, and he gets 20 carries. He gets 5 targets. He is the bell cow for Minnesota. So for the Dalvin Cook manager, very valuable. So when I'm late in the draft, and this is almost like a draft tip too, it's like, yeah, I don't have Dalvin Cook, but to fill up the back end of my bench, why not take a shot on Alexander Mattison instead of Chris Evans, the backup running back in Cincinnati? I had Joe Mixon. I drafted him early. So instead of drafting Chris Evans, a backup running back who I hope I'll never use, instead, let me take Alexander Mattison, where if a Dalvin injury breaks, now I have another starting running back to use and go from there. Obviously, if Joe Mixon goes down, that's the game you play with fantasy. If your guys get hurt, your guys get hurt. But during the preseason, right after the draft, the Dalvin manager comes to me. What can I get for Alexander Mattison? I want to have Alexander Mattison on my team, and that is the side offer. Instead of just waiting for it to pay off on your team, maybe I can chip it, because he is so much more valuable to the Dalvin owner than me. Because if Dalvin goes down, he's got a startable running back for them to go in. So I traded Alexander Mattison in the preseason for Kenneth Walker. And at the time, Rashad Penny was a starting running back. Kenneth Walker, coming off hernia surgery, was going to miss week one, missing weeks. So, you know, he sent me a couple names, and I didn't really love the receivers he was offering. He said maybe Ken Walker. And I was like, you know, and here's where the thinking goes off. All right, well, I just took this guy late. They're pretty similar players. They're both like in backup running backs at the time, but one is a rookie. One's on a team behind a player who gets hurt a lot in Rashad Penny, gets hurt a little bit more frequently than Dalvin Cook. And even if Rashad Penny stayed healthy, I thought Kenneth Walker would still get some work. So in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, I upgrade a little bit because maybe he has a clearer path to touches. What do you know? Dalvin Cook stays healthy for pretty much the whole season so far. He does get nicked up with his shoulder, but really didn't miss any time, any substantial time. And what do you know? Rashad Penny, starting running back on the Seattle Seahawks, hurts his knee. He's out for the year. Kenneth Walker steps in, and he blossoms into a top 10 running back. So you really need to understand, but at the same time, you might think, well, you kind of fleeced him on that deal. Well, he still has Alexander Mattison. The point of the deal for him was to get the handcuff to Dalvin Cook going into the playoffs. And for the record's sake, we're both at 6-4, I believe, in that league, same record. So it worked out for both of us in this terms of we both got what we wanted. And I just took a higher upside pick. He's got more floor with that pick. So it's just like, it's those kind of deals that really allow deals to spark. And I think it's so important to have deals, to have an active league. It's so much more fun when there's deals being flown around, everybody's involved, everybody's connected to the league. It's what fantasy football is supposed to be, and it's why I love it so much. And I thought it was really important to kind of have this almost like how-to on how to trade in fantasy, because I feel like a lot of players take it the wrong way, or they go about it the wrong way, or they're almost scared to do it. And, you know, obviously it hasn't worked out for me in every aspect, but I made a trade last year, Trey Lance, starting running back or starting quarterback for San Francisco. Jimmy Garoppolo goes down. Trey Lance was the starting quarterback. He plays one game, scores like 20 fantasy points, whatever the case may be. I offer him to another guy who was hurting at quarterback, was streaming the quarterback position, and he had some wide receivers, and I needed some wide receivers. I traded him Trey Lance for Allen Robinson. I was taking a bet on Allen Robinson coming back from his draft day on the Bears. I was taking a chance on him getting better, and he was taking a chance on Trey Lance being his starting quarterback for the foreseeable future. Well, what happened? Jimmy Garoppolo came back. Allen Robinson sucked. We both kind of – it was a net neutral. But it's so much more important, at least in my opinion, it's been my philosophy, to go at it, go after it, and make deals. Because you never know, you don't want to sit on your laurels, you don't want to rest on your laurels and just think a team might be good enough. You got to always look to improve and always look to help others when you're talking about trades, because that is what gets deals done, not whether you're winning. That's the one thing, like, you can never worry about who's winning the trade. A trade just went down in the very league I'm in, a team that is a little bit lower in the record category, traded with a team right in the wild card hunt. The team in the wild card hunt traded away Chris Godwin, James Conner, and Khalil Herbert. So a top 20 running back, Chris Godwin, a top 20 receiver-ish, top 25, and then Khalil Herbert, a committee backfield member of the Bears, for Dalvin Cook and DJ Moore. So it's these deals that are kind of interesting to play on, because the wild card team got Dalvin Cook, probably got the best player in the deal, but the team that's kind of struggling record-wise got Chris Godwin and James Conner and potentially Khalil Herbert. Khalil Herbert obviously just went on IR, so that kind of tilts the trade a little bit, but it's those kind of deals that it worked for both teams. My guy needed depth, guy in the wild card wanted more star power, and the deal worked that way. And that's kind of, it just, it's important to keep those, and this is a league also that is very active on trades, so like people that are even considered out of it, maybe, like, they're always looking to improve and they're always looking to trade, and it's not like, you know, this guy's so much better than everybody else, it's like, well, I can't trade him any good players because he's so much ahead of the league. So I think that's also important to do. But I think those are some helpful tips, and they can really help expand your fantasy game. And it's one of the most fun things ever, just to get a deal done. And it's so important. And even just taking it away from the fantasy sports aspect, one of my favorite things about fantasy sports is just how it brings people together and the connectivity that it keeps everybody in. I'm in a league with all my buddies from college. None of us really live near each other. A couple of us live near each other. Like, I'll see some of the guys more often than others, but we're always talking. Once football season comes around, like, I'll talk to these guys almost every week, where I'm texting, hey, what do you think about this guy? You know, I'm kind of looking for this, blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of keeps, and half the time, sometimes we won't even talk about football. Sometimes we'll be like, well, hey, you're just saying, you know, hey, reaching out, saying what's up, blah, blah, blah. And that's just one of the best things about it. Being able to continually stay in touch with people. And, you know, a league that's stale, a league where you know you're not going to be able to trade much and you're not really talking to anybody, it's like you're kind of on your own in the league. Like, you might as well just be playing in a league with random people. So that's where I think the home leagues, the leagues where you know a lot of people, it's so important. And trading is one thing that is just a vehicle to be able to continue the communication and keep the lines open. So I hope these tips kind of helped you guys out. If you have any fantasy tips that you want to run by or anything like that, definitely feel free to leave a comment below your favorite fantasy tip. If you want to shoot us a message on Instagram, on Twitter, feel free to shoot us a message there. But I hope those helped out, and we'll definitely be talking a little bit more fantasy as the year goes on. All right, everyone, that is going to do it for the show today. Once again, check the description below for all our social media handles. Like I said in the last segment, feel free to shoot us any questions, any messages, anything you have in the comments section on Twitter, on Instagram, whatever you got. The show's Twitter account and Instagram account are right here in the bubble for our YouTube listeners. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, check the description below for our social media. Thank you guys again for tuning in. We can't wait to see you back here again next time.